This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Sports addiction, sports obsession. You can't diagnose it as a problem issue when your career is sports. Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports. Now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Still Friday, the 24th of June, 2016. I'm Bob McCowan. That's Arash Madani over there. That's Jeff Blair right here. This is Michael Grange over here. And it's the roundtable on Primetime Sports, a Friday tradition that I know you wouldn't want to miss. And if you're listening to this, you're not missing it. Although there is reason to believe that 2 hours from now, you may wish you missed it. But, well, let's see how it goes.
Don't oversell it.
Everybody okay?
Yeah. I think so.
All right. Grange has no response.
I'm amazing.
Well, would you like a second opinion?
What do you have? 2 days left of work until Labor Day?
A little more than that. You got your free agency.
The day DeRozan resigns.
Yeah. Yeah. There'll be some odds and sods.
One trade that Masai will make.
See, the real veteran move.
And then that's it.
You have to talk into the microphone. Is this your first day on
the
radio?
I said one trade Masai will make, and that's it.
Holy mackerel.
What's the veteran
move?
The
veteran move is when there's stuff to be done, but not too much stuff, that's when you want to be working.
Right.
Right? You don't want to, that way you can kind of ease into your time off.
Gotcha.
Right?
Gotcha.
We'll get the NHL draft goes tonight. We'll get to that. Last night, the NBA draft took place. Were there any shocks at the top of the draft?
Maybe Boston, eh?
Yeah, I mean, just in terms of not so much who was taken, kind of the order of guys being taken, some kind of highly touted people, Labissiere falling to the bottom of the draft.
Went to the bottom of the first round.
Right. So a little bit like that. But in the end, most of the people you expect to be drafted get drafted. I was a little surprised there wasn't more trades, and certainly with Boston and Philadelphia having so many picks and so many kind of options, and neither of them really got anything significant, well, anything done.
Why do you think that is?
I guess I don't know would be my answer, but I think it's because there is so much flexibility yet to come. And,
do you think the salary cap change, the significant bump in the cap this year and then an even bigger bump next year, plays a role in that?
Yeah.
Guys are trying to figure out what the hell this means.
100%. I think you know if you didn't get something done last night, you know that in a way nothing really has changed. There's still 22 teams with near maximum or maximum cap space, and a year from now there's going to be a whole bunch more teams with cap space. So, whereas in the past there's always kind of this bottleneck feeling going into free agency that if you wanted to get something done, it sort of had to be around the draft. Now I don't think there's quite the same urgency.
And I think part of that, too, is for the most part, teams know that what their superstars are going to do if they have expiring deals, like the Cavs with LeBron, like OKC with Durant. But if they opt out and don't sign back, then who and what are you?
See, I have long been of this opinion, and maybe I'm isolated in this opinion. I believe most of the free agents this year will sign one-year deals.
Yeah, of course.
Well, not really, of course, because I've found very few people that have agreed with me. I mean, I think DeRozan will sign. I think the Raptors will try and sign him to a one-year deal. I think Durant will sign a one-year deal. I think anybody who is a free agent this year who has a level of self-confidence will not be worried about the potential of an injury, a career-ending injury, which would destroy their
But it depends on your
financial
years of service,
marketability.
It depends on how many years you're in. That's the biggest thing here.
Meaning
because
what?
Because if you're a guy like Kevin Durant and you sign a one-year deal this year and you play that year out, you will then have had 10 years of accrued service, which means that not only can you sign the extra year because of the bird rights, but suddenly he can sign for $40 million a year.
You go from being the max salary being 30% of
yes,
the salary
I understand.
Cap to 35%.
I understand.
Based on your years of service. So if you're a free agent out of your entry-level deal, it's a totally different dynamic than guys who have spent.
Well, yes and no, because the salary cap is supposedly going to be about $90 million next year.
94.
Okay. And 119 or 120 the following year.
I don't know if it's quite that high.
That's what I'm hearing.
A lot.
Big jump. So why would you take a deal based on a max at 94 when you could take a deal based on a max at 120 or 19 or whatever it happens to be?
Because Kevin Durant's had 3 foot surgeries.
Well, that's the only issue.
And I also think that when you're a free agent, money being what it is and money being equal, you may have a preferred destination in mind. And if you don't sign in that preferred destination right now, that preferred destination may not be interested in you in the next year.
They may be filled up.
I mean, I know what you're saying, and I get it, but I still think that with the money being what it's going to be for those guys, I think a lot of guys go, you know, boy, if the team that I really like, if Cleveland's a team that has a chance to win is offering me as much money as I'm going to get anyplace else, maybe I'll take that for, but they want me for 3 years, gee, maybe I'll take that for 3 years or 4 years, because you know what? Next year, if they want me that bad, that they're willing to pay that. They may do something else to fill that hole. Next year, I may end up looking at, you know, 3 or 4 teams that don't have a shot.
I do see that as a factor, but
there are guys that'll be brave enough and say, screw it, I'll just take 1 year.
Well, I'll say this to Bob's point, like sitting from where we sit or where I sit, and you look at the option of, you know, you can sign a 1 year deal for $30 million with an option at another year to $30 million, but then. You know, typically, when you say a 1 year deal, everyone will sign 1 year and an option. That's their insurance. And you think, yeah, sure, I'd sign 1 year and an option to guarantee me $30 million. I've already probably made $100 million, and then if I do this, I can make $250 million. Right. I get it, right? Because believe me, I think I could get by on the $30 million if worst came to worst. That logic is never really applied in sports. It just seems over and over again, we've seen people go the conservative route. Doesn't matter what the sport. We used to talk about it in baseball regarding David Price or whatever it might be. Certainly in hockey, they go for the longest deal possible for the obvious reasons. I think health is such a premium in there. You're only one or two concussions away from being it all over. And in basketball, the same thing. So the one guy who's not gone that route, who's consistently sort of gambled on himself and it's paid off, has been LeBron James, and he's going to do it again. He's going to keep rolling his 1 year and options over probably as long as he wants, because for him, the flexibility ultimately is what's key.
You know, the other thing I wondered about the draft this year, and the reason there may not have been as many trades as we think, and I'd like to ask you this, but I wonder if maybe teams that may have been looking at what Golden State has done the past year said, okay, we got a small ball, baby. That's where we're going to go. We got to build small ball. They're looking at what Cleveland did and are going, oh, maybe it's not that clear cut yet. Maybe, you know what I'm saying? Maybe they're trying to figure out in which direction the game is going, and as a result, they're not prepared to put together a multiplayer deal. I mean, I'm just throwing that out because I thought there'd be more trades as well.
Well, the one thing that I would say to that, to your point, is whether you agree with small ball as opposed to, you know, the standard 7 foot center and 6'10 power forward. The one thing that is clear is the 3-point shot is a big deal, yeah. And it almost doesn't matter who takes that shot.
I mean, everybody's looking for a guy like Karl Anthony Towns right now, right? That's your NBA player for the future.
You're looking for guys that can shoot. The low post game has virtually disappeared.
Here's the other thing, too, on last night. We'll know 5-6 years from now definitively. It wasn't a really good draft. It wasn't a really deep draft. There wasn't a lot of star power in this draft. So what you thought the currency of what you thought the number 9 overall pick was worth, plus a Terrence Ross, maybe really wasn't.
It wasn't.
What was the one blockbuster? The Ibaka deal.
Right.
You know, and there were a lot of moving parts in that deal. There was a lot to it. But beyond that, the one first-round pick, a high pick, a lottery pick, isn't what it was worth a couple of years ago. And I think that's a big part of this.
All right, let's talk about what the Raptors managed to do. How do we pronounce his name? Jakob?
Jakob Pertl.
Pertl?
Pertl.
There's no R in there.
It's Austrian. He's
pronounce
Austrian.
It with an
it's
R.
Austrian. It's Pertl.
He makes up his own rules.
No, this is going to be confusing for me for years. Maybe I won't be here for years. I won't have to worry about it. Jakob Pertl was their selection. He was deemed to be the best available player considering what they thought they needed. Does his action or his acquisition spell the imminent departure of Biombo?
Yes. I think you look at both the picks they made in the first round, each of them are big men with slightly varying skill sets, but you don't draft two bigs in the first round if you think you're going to go out and re-sign your 1A or backup big man who's headed to free agency. So I think
okay.
That's
question number one. Question number two is, in conversations with both the head coach and the general manager of the Toronto Raptors in the preceding weeks, it was acknowledged specifically by Mr. Ujiri that the primary focus would be on a four, and preferably a four who could shoot from the outside. So a big who can shoot is essentially what they were looking for. They did not get that, we don't think, in this draft. Instead went with Biombo. Did they not get it because it wasn't there?
I think they went and tried to get the best guys they thought were available at the spots. And I think there's two things I would read into those picks. One, you're seeing a very clear philosophy from the Raptors, from Dwayne Casey, from this team, where they really, really value, for lack of a better word, motor, guys who just really compete and want to play hard. And, you know, that's one thing both these guys have in terms of reputation. And the other thing is, as much as this is an Eastern Conference Finals team, I think there is a little bit of a longer view going on here. And there is a recognition that LeBron James isn't going anywhere. And sure, you are competitive. You want to try and figure a way to knock them off. But if by chance you prove unsuccessful against LeBron James again, you want to be in position that the cupboard ain't bare, and maybe it's next year when LeBron pulls up stakes and heads to LA, which a lot of people think might happen, that you're in position to make your move in the East, whatever it might be.
I found it interesting that I think it was in Doug Smith's story, and I think it was in our story as well, Sportsnet story, but the point that Wayne Embry thinks that this guy, that Pirtle, might be able to sort of morph into something resembling a power forward or resembling
he says he fancies himself a potential Pau Gasol.
Right. And I mean the term that gets kicked around now is stretch five.
Right.
Right. And it used to be, you know, so guys, you know, basically you're talking about five guys on the floor.
Can you be a stretch threes. One? Or is that a message from the Department of Redundancy Department?
It'd be funny if all of a sudden you got stretch four, stretch fives, and twos and threes that can shoot. All of a sudden, and if you have a one who can just break guys down and get into the paint, that's pretty useful too. But
so that'd be an unstretched one.
But Bob, going back to your first question,
I can't remember my first question.
They weren't going to re-sign Biombo, not with the money.
That's the second question.
Not with the money that he's going to get. This offseason, it just wasn't going to fit. They couldn't do it.
Well, the reason I ask, though, Arash, is because it raises the question of priorities. Now, I do understand that there is as we get ready for the NHL draft, you know, the consensus always is in hockey and in baseball, and to a great extent, although not exclusively in football, draft the best player. Except if you need a quarterback in football, in which case you draft all the quarterbacks you can find. In the NBA, because essentially you play with seven or eight guys, you can't afford to keep drafting players at a position that is already in which you already have not only a player that can play 40 minutes a night.
No, I know where
you're
going.
But you have depth.
What you're saying, sure.
Right? So now you position becomes even more important. So now the two positions where you felt you had need would be a backup center and a starting four. In my mind, there's no question which of those two is more important.
But Jakob Pertl, he's not their starting four next year, is he?
No, I think, look, you still have Pat Patterson. So, It's not
good enough.
True, but he's a lot of people would say he was better than the guy that started.
No disrespect, Patrick, but you know, he can play for me, but he can't play starting minutes.
And
Scola's not a starter.
He won't be back.
Scola won't be back.
I mean, I think they definitely were in on Serge Ibaka. My kind of impression is that the ask was beyond Terrence Ross. It was one of those trades where he's coming and you don't have anyone to play with him. So you're talking Corey Joseph, Norm Powell, maybe Pat Patterson too, a pick, and this is for a guy who's going to be a free agent a year from now.
Right.
Right. So it's, you know, and my understanding is Serge Ibaka, there is a relationship between him and Ujiri. They go way back, as Ujiri does with most of the African players. He's encountered them in youth camps, etc. And you know, but it's more of a timing thing. And do you want to just wait until this guy is a free agent, and you know, you go and get him then when he wants to come, and he's joining? It's a little bit like the scenario at the trade deadline. Do you want to wait and get guys to? You want to keep your good guys and go and add people to what you have versus sort of sending bodies out to bring body in, and you end up treading water.
Yeah, it raises prior to that my point. And Masai was never going to get himself into a position that he inherited when he got the job, that he wasn't going to have any draft picks on draft night. He was going to have at least one, if not two, draft picks. But scenario-wise, let's say he didn't have anything last night, they're still not re-signing Biombo. Biombo's going to make upwards of $14 million more this summer than he made last year. It wasn't happening. Not with the money they're giving Valanciunas, not with the money that's being spread out, not with the money that they're going to give DeRozan.
Well, I think you have to be hard-pressed to give that to a guy who's going to play projectedly when Valanciunas is healthy 10, 12, 14 minutes a night.
Right.
Regardless of how good he is, unless you think he's better than Valanciunas, and as exciting as he was, and he's exciting, Valanciunas is a better player overall and still has upside. So I don't
And so does Biombo. Biombo still has upside. He's allegedly in his early mid-20s.
Oh, even if he's 2 years younger, he's still 25. He's not calcifying.
Well, I want to here's a question that we must ask us sensitively, and with the understanding that we all know Masai Ujiri, we all both like him, I think, and respect him. Is there any chance he is too focused on international players?
No.
You don't think so?
No. I mean, I think he's focused on getting players that it's taken a long time for this team to get to the point where they had a feeling for what they really wanted to, either in players they were bringing in or that players they could bring in that would adapt to what they already have here in terms of attitude and things. I think they've reached that point. And yeah, you've got a pretty international roster, but I think that's probably a good thing, as long as you get the right international players.
You know, I think the answer to that is if he was fixated on international players, you probably wouldn't have seen a Norman Powell.
Yeah,
Corey Joseph.
But what I mean is with that pick, there would have been somebody you could draft and stash maybe.
And his two best players.
Well, I don't think I'm not suggesting he's only going to draft, African players. Or South American players, international players in general. No, I'm not saying that. It's just that there seems to be a pattern of at least one of the picks kind of off the board.
Well, both of them are, they're kids from Cameroon. I mean,
let's understand the North American player now, for the most part, is a one and done anyway.
Well, no, but
they're as much of an unknown as anybody else from anywhere else.
Here's a point, though, is when the San Antonio Spurs were. A couple of years ago, there's some really, really good features written on the San Antonio Spurs, and you had Greg Popovich talking about what is their way, what is their secret, why have they been 17 years of 50-plus wins or whatever the number is. And you look at their roster, very, very international, and he's unapologetic about it. Mm-hmm. He says, we have our company philosophy is we want people who are over themselves. In other words, their ego isn't, above and beyond the teams. And more and as often as not, he found international players were amenable to that kind of outlook. And
they're more humble.
more humble, more team guys.
Mature.
Pick a word.
Right.
But there's Greg Popovich saying what's maybe not that politically correct, but I'm not interested in American kids growing up in the AU culture. Everything's been handed, coddled. They've had sort of advisors since they were 15 years old, on and on, whatever stereotype you want to apply. He's not in for it. And I'm not saying that's what the Raptors are doing, but there is definitely an understanding of the kind of people they want. And I don't think they're looking at their passports one way or the other.
Pascal Siakam?
Siakam, yes.
A native of Cameroon, but played at New Mexico State. 6'10", 22 years old. So he says. Averaged 20.3 points, 11.6 rebounds, 2.2 blocks a game. That's big numbers.
Yeah. And both these guys, interestingly, it goes back a little bit. The Blue Jays went through this phase a little while where they drafted college players because their productivity was more measurable and predictable.
Right.
Maybe you didn't get the ceiling, but they reached their potential sooner. Both these guys statistically were the two most productive players taken. When you bundle all their stats together and spit out one number, a PER number, whatever it might be, were the two most productive guys in the draft. And, you're talking a PER of above, I think, 32 for Poeltl and 31.5 for Siakam, which over an NBA season is almost like record-breaking. So I think, and this guy, he very much fits a mold. He's really, the name that has been associated with him, there's three names you're going to hear. One, Biombo Light. Mm-hmm. Not nearly as powerful as Biombo, but the principle is there. The other guy's Tristan Thompson. Just a guy who's not going to need the ball to be useful offensively and defensively. And another that popped in today was Amir Johnson, with more athleticism and maybe a little bit more skill.
Is there a repetitiveness in these two draft selections? In other words, are these guys essentially competing with each other for the same job?
Nope. I think one's a
five and one's a four?
One's a five, one's a four, and, probably the one kid
goes to the D-League.
But you're going to have four guys in your big man rotation, and let's just say a year from now, they're all part of your rotation. Siakam's probably the guy you can play. If Poeltl ends up being a bit of a face-up threat, then Siakam's kind of like the guy who can go run around and do all the switching on the perimeter while he sort of stays home. There's something, they're very positive on Poeltl's skill in terms of being maybe a high-low passer, can play with Valanciunas.
He's a good post-up player, a good guy under the basket. So, I haven't seen him take a shot that's longer than a foot.
Yeah. I mean, all this is to say, you don't know.
JV?
No. Poeltl.
No.
But I mean, in limited highlights and what I could find on him, I didn't see a shot that was more than a foot long. everything was at the basket. Everything was a layup or a dunk. And I haven't seen anything of Siakam. So I don't know whether he can shoot from the outside.
He's actually coached by a Canadian over there at New Mexico State, Paul Weir,
who was on this program.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think internally they believe they've got guys who are either in their program or in another program or going to be assets. And, you go back to last year's draft and you take DeLon Wright, who apparently has generated a ton of interest around the league, taken at number 20. Because of the 905 experience, these guys do get scouted. They do get seen. Certainly Norm Powell, everyone's familiar with now. And so I think, they are trying to backfill like you're referring to at the four and at the five, but also they're just trying to get as many useful players as they can. And, maybe you bundle them, tie them up, and hand them in a bow to somebody, and that's where you get your starting power forward.
In all fairness, I sit corrected. I just saw the end of the highlights package on Poeltl, and his last shot was about 3 feet. So there you go. Anything else on the NBA draft that you'd like to discuss or address?
No, Jamal Murray
was sort of a
Jamal Murray. Yeah,
where do you go? Denver.
Yeah, but I mean that's 12 Canadians taking the first round in 5 years.
Yeah, big deal. Be nice if some of them played for the national
team.
You
surprised that Thon Maker went? He went where he did.
Very much.
Milwaukee,
Talk about age.
And we are claiming him, right?
Ish.
We're claiming him. We're not. Oh, it's Canadian-ish.
It depends how he plays.
It depends how good he is. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. But, you talk about age. There was a report flying around yesterday morning that he was 24 years old. Right now he's in theory, 19.
I bet there are a lot of high school coaches who will tell you he's probably 24 years old.
So that's pretty extreme.
What, did he play 8 years of high school?
But, he played 14 years at prep, I think, wasn't it?
14 one of those, years, one of those, 14 years of grade
one of those
school.
Moving, one yeah, of those moving it, I mean, prep schools.
Guy, you know, it's very interesting. I mean, he was a guy who did the last 2 years of his basketball training in Canada at a prep school, high school here, which is kind of unique. And that school, that's the same place that Jamal Murray went. So Orangeville, at the Athlete Institute in Orangeville, the two guys taken in the top 10 from one high school team.
So he's ours. We're claiming him.
Yeah.
Until he screws up.
Until he screws up.
Still with basketball, is it too late to still be talking about the Cleveland Cavaliers victory? I feel like it was months ago.
No, it was so much fun, though.
It's only a week. It wasn't even a week ago.
No, it just feels like, you know, thank God it's over.
Because I don't think the parade's ended yet, has
yeah,
it?
Yeah, well, there was two, right?
I think it's still going
LeBron
on.
LeBron took it to Akron yesterday.
I heard J.R. Smith actually put a shirt on
I was
going
to say, yeah, I bet there were a couple of trips back to Vegas.
They went back
in
to Vegas, yeah.
J.R. Smith was photographed on a golf course not wearing a shirt, but apparently today he put one on. That was the one game where I had no horse in the race, didn't care whatsoever, and with a minute to go, I was filled with this nervousness, this angst. There was so much kind of riding on it, and I guess as a sports fan, I was like, wow, what's going
to
happen?
You know what?
I've talked to so many people who've said exactly the
same
thing.
I was kind of cheering for Golden State insofar as I had a rooting interest, but it really became hard in the seventh game, and we're watching it at home, it became hard not to cheer for LeBron. At least I found that.
Sure.
I just found it very difficult.
I've never
to not
cheered
cheer
for
LeBron.
LeBron. I must tell you, I've never cheered for LeBron, but I respect LeBron. I don't know why. I just can't develop a real for him. I don't know why.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are like, he's got a little bit of that Wilt Chamberlain effect where it's like cheering for Goliath, you know, you're kind of like,
isn't it amazing, though, that you play 82
games?
But
I cheered for Jordan. Was that how was that different?
Well, I think with Jordan,
Jordan didn't have a personality. If you organized a search party, you couldn't find a personality in that body.
Well, the thing with Jordan is whatever, you know, whatever story he started writing in terms of on the basketball floor, you knew what the ending was going to be. Hmm. He was going to be the hero, and they were going to win. Now, didn't happen all the time, but pretty close.
Pretty close.
And I think with LeBron, he's sort of let you down enough times that...
Did he, though?
Yeah, the most impressive thing, I know I've said this many times, the most impressive thing about this final was the last three games and LeBron's performance in them.
Unbelievable.
Because I thought, I said this after game four, that the one missing piece for me and LeBron in watching him all these years was his willingness to be unselfish. It's the one thing that I differentiated him from Michael from.
His willingness to be selfish, you mean?
Be selfish,
Thank you. Yeah, okay.
Be selfish.
I agree.
And say, all right, guys, you know, I've been passing the ball around and standing around for three quarters. Yeah. You guys are losing the game. Stand back. I'll win for you. Just take a seat. And damn if he didn't do it. Virtually every time.
Games five and six are...
And that's what LeBron did.
He was great in game 7-2. Game five and six are absolutely... as good. I defy to find anyone who's played two games consecutively as good as that.
Led the finals.
One man show.
Led the finals.
Magic had
points.
Some good back-to-back games.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, led the finals in points, rebounds, assists, blocks, and steals.
Excuse me? It just means all the other guys were crap. But, that's all that means.
But I mean, what I was talking to Dwayne Casey about this today, and what for me has always been sort of, I wouldn't say love-hate as far as I look at LeBron. I certainly never hated him. I always found a little bit frustrating because there's been a book on how he can be covered. And that's basically you go under every screen, you sag back, you pack the paint, you make him shoot over you. And then as his career, the certain last couple of 2-3 years of his career, he has been both unwilling to take that shot and in the last year and a half, unable
to,
and it's
to
kind
make
of, so,
that shot.
So you're kind of watching it going, you're being solved. And that was the case through game two, the first two games of this series. And then for whatever reason, he gained some confidence. He decided it was time, like you say, for him to do it. And all of a sudden, once he starts, we're talking pretty simple mid-range jumpers, steps into those with confidence, let alone threes, he is absolutely unstoppable.
You know, I still think, looking back at that series, though, Draymond Green being thrown out and Andre Iguodala developing
who knows what
problem.
Game five would have been like.
The two guys that were going to, I think, stop LeBron. Or
if ifs and buts
LeBron
were candies and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas.
No,
but what happened in game six? What happened in game six with LeBron? The Cavs stayed patient offensively in their half court. They ran ball screen after ball screen after ball screen until the matchup was on Steph.
Yep.
They got Steph in foul trouble early, and then LeBron was able to knock down that mid-range jumper. Then what happens in game seven? After 82 games and whatever, 25 playoff games,
yep,
you get to game seven, fourth quarter with a minute to go, it's tied. After all of this, and what do? Ball screen after ball screen after ball screen. Kyrie draws the one-on-one with Steph. Step back three to win it.
I think the other thing I'll take away from that series in game seven in particular is Steph Curry cracked.
Yep. Yeah.
Right? And I don't think it's going to be the end of him by any stage, but he got frustrated with himself. He felt that, you know, there's so much conversation about who's better, him or LeBron, who's better, him or Kyrie. And then with all the chips down, that last possession, you know, and all of a sudden he's dribbling out a shot clock trying to find a three over Kevin Love when the whole key was open behind him. Just go take a layup and we'll extend the game.
To me, that pass kind of summed
sure.
up his.
Yeah. And there's more than final. One of those. Some really careless passes. Yeah.
And how about Kevin Love? So maligned through this entire thing, makes the one defensive stop. Just didn't let Steph do anything at the end worth all the money and all the headaches at the end when it mattered.
To my point, Steph Curry played right into his hands.
Yeah.
Yep.
A championship for Cleveland. And as Jim Brown told us the other day, it's been a long wait.
And by the way, just to interrupt, I heard that interview. It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was just some cool. incredible radio.
He's pretty easy to interview.
He's very cool.
29 really before. He's the greatest ever played. 29 before the hour. I will take the break, come back with more. We got a whole bunch. It's almost like a potpourri, a cornucopia of topics to discuss. And we'll get to some of them. Possible to say all. It's primetime on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go. Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We can see ourselves on this monitor. We don't need two monitors on. We don't care.
Why do we have a delay?
Well, this is an off-air monitor.
So that's a sign.
And this is a live monitor over here. Watch what I do on the monitor on the right. If
on
you
your
miss,
right or my... Okay.
Your right or my right?
If you miss it,
there it is. Yeah.
7 seconds later, go watch what happens on the monitor on the left.
I got it.
God almighty. It's the roundtable, ladies and gentlemen. Arash Madani, Michael Grange, Jeff Blair. Barely here.
I'm here. I'm just trying to...
It's basically all bullets here from this point on. And just a plethora of little things to discuss. Let's go to hockey for the moment. This week, the Toronto Maple Leafs traded their 30th overall pick in the 2016 NHL draft. I love saying that. To the Anaheim Quacks for goaltender Frederik Andersen. Statistically, Andersen looks like a keeper. The dilemma you have is assessing a goaltender when he's played on a team that has had long-term regular season success and is coming to a team that has had longer-term regular season, no success.
Futility?
Yes. So, who this guy is?
He's an improvement over what they had, and, you know,
a cardboard cutout might be an improvement.
But regardless of where this team is in its development curve, whether it's 3 years away or 2 years away or however long away it is, I think it was incumbent on the Leafs to bring in not just an average goaltender, but a guy who could be more than average. Because if you're going to be running out a team of young guys, you're going to want your goaltender at some point to win games where the young guys play really well. You know, you don't want to have a lot of games where your guys have played really well and they've lost 3-2 because your Civ let in two goals in the third period. It's like the old thing, do you need a closer on a baseball team that isn't contending? The first answer would be, well, no, it's a waste of money. But after a while, you go, you know what? It's kind of good to, if you want to talk about winning a building culture or building a winning culture, it's nice to be good enough that on those days where you guys do play well,
we got a guy who can actually finish a game.
Exactly.
Like there's so much talk about culture all the time in different sports. You have to create a culture where losing isn't okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And no, your goaltender gives you a chance.
Yeah, I'm okay with all this. What I'm asking is, and of course, as per usual, you guys are ignoring the question and just going off on your own tangents. How good is this guy?
Better than what they had, which is good enough.
Oh, well, all right. Okay.
He's big, so slump-proof or more slump-proof, you'd think, than...
I've seen big guys who couldn't stop a beach ball.
The one thing that concerns me a little bit is he's going from being a backup or occasional starter.
Oh, he's half a starter.
Half a starter, whatever you want to call it, to, you know, in a non-traditional hockey market, as right. we like to call them now, to being handed the reins on a behind a shaky D in Toronto, which has proven to be too much for a lot of guys.
Let me ask it this way.
So I just found that 5-year contract just being handed to him right away, I found that it went a little weird.
Well, and that's part of the equation too. And I'm not suggesting for a second that I know more than they do. In fact, they know a lot more than I do, which is why I'm asking these questions. Is this the guy you should have targeted when it is apparent there are other goaltenders, at least one significant one, who is also available? Now, I can't pretend to know what the cost in Pittsburgh would be for that goaltender.
Not just that. John Shannon had reported something just this afternoon. He said, add the name of Jimmy Howard to the Flames' goaltending crease, perhaps. He said he's hearing Ben Bishop wants a long-term extension. If he's traded Calgary, he wants 7 years, $7 million per if he's going to leave Tampa to go to the Flames. So it's not just Marc-Andre Fleury.
There's others in play.
Yeah.
But 7 years at $7 million per. What did Anderson get?
Five times five.
That's two. Marc-Andre Fleury's got a couple, 3 or 4 years left at six and a half.
So I've got to think with this team being close to the salary cap, that extra $2.5 million a year probably makes him a little more palatable as well.
Does he have the ability to, in the right scenario, become a frontline goaltender if he's not now?
All you can do is his track record, which, you know, when they kind of do the slightly advanced goalie metrics, you know, what's his save percentage and even strength and, you know, control for shot quality and all the guys kind of things. He grades out very, very well. He's up in the Corey Crawford range and all of that. And sure, the sample size isn't great because it's only been 100 games over the past couple of years, but what else can you go on?
Yeah, I mean, there's another former LA goaltender that the Maple Leafs went out sure. and got, but the difference was that he was a very, very, very part-time player.
Well, right. Not only that, I think there's a sense that Frederick Anderson is more of a quote-unquote Mike Babcock style of goalie. Mike Babcock likes the bigger goalies.
Sure.
And Jonathan Bernier certainly doesn't fit that mold.
Let's just go through this again. Have we not seen the script before where the Maple Leafs sent a first and a second to Southern California to get a goaltender back in return? And didn't that team draft John Gibson with that second round pick? And John Gibson's the last man standing with the Ducks while another Anaheim goaltender comes back to Toronto?
But, you know, there's also a scenario here, and Jeff Merrick talked about this. There's a scenario here where the Leafs do use their next pick after the pick they traded to draft the best available goalie in the draft, the kid from Sweden whose name escapes me. But the guy is sort of considered to be the best available goalie, and he's probably not going to go before that pick. So, you know, Merrick's one of those guys who studies this thing a lot, and he seems to think that in addition to getting this guy, they may get their goalie of the future, too.
The flip side is goalies, one of the styles, too, is to kind of, to your point, is to do goalie by committee, at least in terms of your system. You don't know who's going to turn out. It's almost like relief pitchers, right? Like, you just need a lot of them. And the one thing that this does, I guess, is you've got a potentially very good, but at least clearly a very competent goalie, and it just eases that question. That's now out of the way.
Yeah.
And if a guy emerges over time who can steal this guy's job all the better. But in the meantime, as you're going into next season and arguably a couple of seasons after that, you've relieved yourselves a bunch of chaos. You've relieved yourselves a bunch of drama. And, you know, you can just focus on other parts of your team. And, you know, maybe there's some merit in that, too.
The Toronto Maple Leafs, of course, have the first pick in tonight's NHL draft. And there's no doubt in anybody's mind who they're going to take. And there's no chance they're going to make a trade. Do you think it's better that there's a clear number one? Most years is a clear number one. But it's not always perceived right away, like early in the process, of who the number one guy is going to be. This guy was going to be the number one pick a year ago. Everybody, right?
Well, behind McDavid.
Since the draft last year, everybody said,
well, McDavid was
going to be. Yeah, I see what you mean. Because people have said that if this kid had come out, I mean, or didn't come out because he was late, he missed it by a few days. If he'd been available, he would have been the second guy after McDavid.
Yeah, so, but then became the obvious number one a year ago.
Yeah.
And has stayed the obvious number one, in spite of the fact that we don't get to do an apples-to-apples comparison with anybody else because of where he played. Now, having said that, the next two guys in the draft are both Finns. And
very, very good players. I mean, one guy was the MVP of the World Junior. The other guy was the MVP at the World Championships. So. Is that right? And, you know, I think what's...
Well, does that raise any questions in your mind about Austin Matthews?
Well, sometimes I've seen this in the NBA many times, that the catbird seat is kind of the number two pick often because... You can't really go wrong if the other guy ends up being as good as everyone says he is. Well, you were picking number two, so there's nothing you can do about that. And if you take the next guy, it's like Kevin Durant versus Greg Oden going back a few years. Like Kevin Durant was number two. Michael Jordan was number three. It's kind of if you're in there and the talent falls to you, there's no pressure at number two. At number one, you really do have to make sure you get the right guy. And if Austin Matthews isn't forever and ever the best player in this draft class, they made the wrong pick. That's as simple as that.
I think the fact, though, that he's, by most people's account, clearly the best center available, I think that helps. Helps the Leafs here because they need a center.
I think that makes people...
Every team needs a center.
They really need a center.
They need a great player, and as much as it would be wonderful if the great player turns into being a great player, if one of these other two kids ends up being the next Ovechkin, and Austin Matthews is kind of like a pretty good number one center, it's a bad pick.
I get the sense these guys, you can't blindly trust people. I understand this, but I get the sense that this management group is pretty sharp and has a pretty good idea of what they're doing.
They've turned
but when
over
was the last
rock,
time we didn't worry. Know who the clear-cut number one was going to be? When was the last time there was a real debate? I mean, there was a fabricated...
Seth Jones and Nathan MacKinnon, maybe?
Sure.
And Seth Jones went what? He slid, right? He went four, I think, in the end.
Yeah. To Nashville.
That might be the...
You know, there was the Taylor-Tyler.
But
really, I mean, you knew...
Most of the time, you knew
it was going to be Tavares. You knew it was going to be Crosby. You knew it was going to be McDavid. You knew it was going to be Hall. You know it's going to be Matthews.
You didn't know it was going to be Hall.
No, Hall wasn't a definitive number one.
Yeah, Taylor Hall, Tyler Seguin. I mean, they played the same league and tied for the lead in scoring.
Yeah.
And then, so...
All right, we got to take the break, mercifully. And we'll talk a little bit about P.K. Subban ahead for those P.K. Subban fans. We think it's much ado about nothing. The Canadians are saying it's much ado about nothing, but we'll see what the panel has to say. DJ wins his first major U.S. championship. The USGA comes under scrutiny, mostly by this show. Do you make rule changes as a result of their despicable performance? The Toronto Argonauts have their home opener at BMO Field, and they had a good crowd, but it wasn't a sellout. Maybe only 5% of the tickets went unsold. But is that a dangerous thing? As we now have to wait for a couple of games. Argos play two on the road before they come back home. And, man, did they stink out the joint. All those things, plus the NHL's going to Las Vegas, and we haven't even talked about the Blue Jays. We'll do all that when we come back. Hope you will, too. It's Primetime on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.